Straight up with no chaser. You're in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
I thought our fan base showed up, man, big time. Not surprising, but never taking that for granted. The red, white, and blue of the Buffalo Bills showed up all the way out here in the Northwest and couldn't be more grateful.
But this was a pretty good performance, wouldn't you say?
By our fans, for sure. Yeah, by our fans. Yeah. Did you hear them out there? I've never heard this place like that in all my years in the NFL. Been out here a number of years. I've never heard that. And that's a testament to the Bills, testament to the Bills fans and the organization, really, for the tradition that they've built over the years.
Yeah. That's something we didn't talk about as we were opening up. It really felt like a Bills home game at points of yesterday's game.
Yeah, we got audio from Geno Smith saying, like, for Geno Smith and the Seahawks just to say, hey, our fans got it done. I thought, joining us here, Nate Geary, I mean, it's one thing. I mean, we know the Bills fan base travels well, Nate, but those are the 12s. That's supposedly a legendary fan base, and to get overtaken the way they did yesterday. Nate, appreciate your time. How are you, bud?
I'm well, guys. It's a October football game against an AFC opponent, 1 o'clock in the afternoon for them. Yeah, you know, I feel like that's probably an easy game to sell your tickets for, no?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean,
Even if it's Josh Allen and the Bills.
Right. Well, and you know, what is it worth? It's worth what somebody will pay for it. And I have a feeling Bills Mafia has no problem spending that money on what they love to do, which is watch the Bills play on a Sunday. So a big win. And man, can we start with what the offense had dialed up? Or it felt like Joe Brady dialed up the perfect offensive game plan. And it's something when you see it executed the way it was executed yesterday, Nate.
Yeah, I think 2 weeks in a row, their offense is kind of I think, you know, we've seen when this offense has been at its best over the last couple of years, kind of regardless of who's calling plays. And Josh Allen and the offense sort of runs through Josh Allen. The thing I think is that it's finally working for this offense is that Josh doesn't also have to be the primary running back, right? He doesn't have to be the primary facilitator in the run game. And now we're seeing what kind of a complete offense can look like, which is kind of what I think, you know, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean wanted from this offense all along was, hey, you know, when the Bills are going to need Josh to run and make big plays on third and fourth down come January, you know, he'll be ready to do that. But I think what they want to be able to do is also turn the ball around, you know, turn around and hand the football off, have, you know, play action on first down, which we saw way more of this week over the last couple of weeks. They've been trending away from being the team that I think has been maybe all too predictable on first down. They like to run the football a lot, especially out of shotgun, and they've been moving more to the under center stuff. Yesterday, I saw two toss sweeps, one out of shotgun and then one from under center as well, where they're starting to attack the boundary and starting to stretch defenses out horizontally because this is a team that really likes to run dive and likes to run that pin and pull concept to run inside the guards and the tackles. And they haven't really shown a willingness to get the ball outside of the tackles. And you have a guy like James Cook, who I think has really good foot speed. We saw, you know, him beat Terrell Dotson to the edge on that first touchdown that he had. And I think it was a really good example of him doing a great job bouncing that play. But I'd like to see the Bills and Joe Brady start to attack the edge a little bit more with their running game. But you know, I think all in all, we saw a couple designed runs from Allen, one on third down that, you know, I think it was like their defensive end went really wide and it ended up opening up a great running lane for Allen to get the first down. But like all in all, I just think this is kind of the culmination of a couple of years of trying to find the most efficient way to transition away from Josh as the, you know, sort of every down running back in this team and the guy that can throw the football. And I think they're finding that sweet spot where they can be most efficient offensively.
Yeah, Nate, I'm not particularly a big fan of the fade pattern. However, I think it's noteworthy what that chemistry that Allen is developing here with Keon Coleman. The first time it didn't work. Second time, I don't know if it's exactly a fade, but hey, there's one-on-one. I'm going to let my guy win his battle, which Coleman did. And where are we at in terms of the development of Keon Coleman after another impressive performance, would you say?
He kind of looks like a stud. He's kind of now earned some of these yards after catch throws. The ones that had really kind of the idea behind this offense were those we're going to go to you know, Curtis Samuel. Obviously, Samuel injured, didn't play this week with the shoulder. And I think it opened up some opportunities on some of those quick hitting plays. And he's made the most of it. Frankly, between him and Shakir, they've really been the ones that have facilitated that short screen game to the wide receiver. And I think they bring two different sort of looks for a defense where, you know, Shakir is, you get the ball to him quickly, and he's a hard guy to bring down. And then you get to Coleman, and it just feels like he strides guys. Like, he gets the ball in his hand. He's physical. He's north-south. He's kind of like the perfect, you know, the thunder and lightning, kind of how you're looking like at you have the running back position with James Cook, who's a little bit, you know, a little bit more quicker and more of a finesse back. But I, having said that, I mean, his second touchdown was one of the most physical runs I've seen from James Cook with his, you know, in his time with the Bills. But I think they've got those two, Coleman and Shakir, have a really unique yard after catch ability and provide two different sort of looks in that wide receiver screen game. And it worked really well the last 2 weeks. And listen, we could talk about, you know, Keon Coleman all day. But, you know, I think Khalil Shakir is right now, you know, this team's number one receiver. And Amari Cooper, although he only had one catch for 3 yards or whatever it was, it is very clear to me he's made a significant impact on how defenses are trying to defend the Bills. And it's really opened up things for Coleman to take the next step and Shakir. And when it's all said and done, guys, and Curtis Samuel can get back in this lineup, I think they have a very formidable, you know, a group of four receivers. And Samuel being their number four instead of their number two or number three, I think speaks to a position that started with a lot of question marks, but is rounding in shape. And I think slotted a little better than it was, you know, going into the season.
Yeah, Nate, I mean, I'm just kind of shocked that Kansas City let Keon Coleman go by them and let him fall to the Buffalo Bills. It's kind of shocking for an organization that's had as much success as they've had. I don't like that my mind goes this way sometimes, Nate, but it's a victory Monday, and after the Bills win, and there's not a ton to complain about, I want to talk about James Cook for a second because he had another great game. And James Cook is a star running back in this league. Will the Bills do what star running backs want and acquiesce and actually pay a running back? We haven't really seen McDermott and Bean do that. Project out what you think James Cook's shelf life is with the Buffalo Bills here, Nate.
Well, I think what's unique about him, you know, knock on wood, is he's been pretty healthy really over the course of his career. Obviously missed a game earlier this season with that toe injury, but you know, largely he's been available, and that's always the issue with running backs in the NFL is availability. And I think if one year were to maybe shift the narrative a little bit on the running back and the free agent market, it might be this year with all the success that I think the Eagles are now having with Saquon Barkley, paying him and kind of seeing what he's been able to do, getting his first real second contract, you know, not being you know, tagged. I think is helping the situation. DeAndre Swift has had up and downs this year, but largely has been very good for the Chicago Bears, who they went out and paid him in this offseason as well. So, you know, listen, I think if the number's right, that they'll 100% consider it. But I think what they might continue to do is just draft guys between the second and fourth rounds, and they're seeing it across the NFL. I mean, this kid yesterday for the 49ers last night is, you know, Jordan Mason at, you know, 2 weeks ago led the NFL in rushing yards, gets hurt, and the third stringer comes in and looks even better than Mason does.
Yeah.
So I think with that, you have to kind of realize that when you're paying a quarterback like you will be with Josh Allen, and I expect him to probably rework or extend that contract this offseason and give him a little bit more money, give them some more flexibility you know, on the salary cap. I think that move is for sure coming. You know, you may not have the luxury of being able to pay a running back a second contract if you're also paying. I think Christian Benford might be a top three, top four number in the cornerback market. I think Rousseau will probably be a top 10 number at edge. And then Bernard's probably going to be a top two or top three number at linebacker. All of a sudden, you go from having a team where you're wondering, you know, does this roster have blue chip players? I think we talked about this in the offseason, guys. It was like, you look at Kansas City, and consistently they've got three or four Hall of Fame players on their team, plus a Hall of Fame coach. That gives them kind of an advantage when you're fitting the rest of the roster around those guys. And the Bills transitioned away from not Hall of Famers, but really damn good players, and they replace them or have been in the process of replacing them with really good young players. And I think between Bernard, Rousseau, and Benford, you know, you've got three guys right now that could really press to be making a lot of money over the next couple of years. But we'll see. We'll see what the number looks like and how the rest of the market shakes out next year. But it would maybe be surprising if he you know, ends up seeing a second contract. But I guess I would say never.
Nate Geary, Buffalo Bills Radio Network, our guest here. Nate, there is going to be a roster move coming up here tomorrow. Hey, Von Miller is back. I don't think the Bills particularly miss Von Miller in these four games. Is he? He's just a backup at this point, correct? I mean, what you're seeing out of Rousseau and Epineza, like, I would only put in Miller if they you know, needed a little bit of a breather here.
Well, I think that he's going to probably go back to doing what he was doing before he was suspended, and he was doing it at the most efficient level he's had over in probably the last three or four seasons. So I think what it does is, you know, for me, I'm thinking about what's the next move. Obviously, Josh Uche today gets moved, thanks a pant load, New England, for trading them, I think, a good player. And they're also going to get healthier on the defensive line. That really solidifies them. An already really good defense, if not the league's best, right up there. Getting a little bit better. And I'm thinking to myself, what move can the Bills make? They obviously make the move for Cooper. What's the next one? And I think for me, one of them is you're getting Von Miller back. And just like it did with the wide receiver room, I think it slots everybody down. Dwayne Smoot has played very good football. Casey Tuhill made a great play yesterday. Yeah. He looked good when given the opportunity. You know, Javon Solomon has also looked good when given an opportunity to play and getting there. He had another sack yesterday. So, I think it's a very good problem to have. I think getting him for the 15 or 20 or so plays that he can give you, especially on third down as a pass rushing specialist, it only helps you and provides the additional depth on the outside there on the edge. And to me, I think the question about, you know, where Brandon Bean could look to add wouldn't surprise me at all if they look to maybe, especially not maybe knowing what they're going to get when Wayne Carter returns, if he's going to be able to return from that wrist surgery he had last week. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they go out and maybe try to make a move for a veteran defensive tackle, because there are several out there with very palatable cap figures that they could go get to really kind of maybe solidify the middle, with the idea that, you know, maybe that's the one area they'd like to get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger at.
Nate, when we had you on last week, you didn't hesitate when we asked why Josh Allen should be at the top of the list for MVP consideration, even though Lamar Jackson had a near-perfect game and a 5-touchdown performance on a Monday Night Football game against Tampa Bay. It's a week-to-week league, and I think those chants are only going to grow louder and louder and louder. Talk about a little bit more on what we talked about last week with Josh Allen potentially having his first MVP season.
Yeah, and you want to talk about one of the things that you know makes good quarterbacks great, right, or great quarterbacks great, is they elevate the play of people around him. And you're seeing what he's been able to do. And listen, a lot of credit is absolutely deserving of Keon Coleman for developing the way that he has, and Shakir developing the way that he is, and Kincaid developing the way that he is. But now you're starting to see guys like Dawson Knox finally find their role, right? So, but part of that is when you've got a great quarterback, they find ways to get the best out of the guys that are kind of in his group around him. And they did a great job of kind of realizing they needed a little bit more to help them unlock. And they're getting that. But I think for me, it's hard, because if you look at Josh Allen, and I think in large part Lamar Jackson too, is both have sort of, you know, really rounding their game into the players that they're going to be for the rest of their careers, which is going to have to be quarterbacks. They're not going to, neither of those guys are going to be able to rely on their legs like they do right now, or they have historically over the next 3, 4, 5 seasons. And you're starting to see them develop into the passers that are the guys that win Super Bowls, right? And from the pocket and winning from the pocket, you hear, as old school as you want to say it is, when you hear the Tony Dungys, when you hear the Cowers and these older head coaches talk about, and even Tom Brady to an extent now that he's got a camera on him at all times, talk a lot about, you know, the best quarterbacks, they win from the pocket and they add that other stuff as sort of features to a really strong game from the pocket. And I think that's where Josh right now is probably playing better than anyone in the league. And that should only, his resume should only get better, especially I'm looking at that four game stretch of, you know, Kansas City, Detroit, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Like if they can win two or three of those games, and Josh is a big reason why, you know, he's going to really put himself in, I think, in a great position to get his first one. And it'll make everybody feel better, right? I guess we'll all feel pretty fine, I guess.
Yeah. Nate, I don't think it's too soon to start thinking about playoff seeding. We kind of touched on this, and some guests we've had, I'm like, no. And like, you are up four games in the win column. Like, it is going to be November, and you're up four games. And if you go up five on Miami here, what is the ceiling here? Are we just kind of thinking that Kansas City and undefeated, they're too far gone? Or would you think the two seed would be possible for this Bills team?
I do. I also think that there's going to come a time here. You're going to get Kansas City straight up, right? So you're going to have an opportunity. But, there's just no way that Kansas City is going to be able to plop along for the next, 10 weeks or whatever it is, playing the same way and keep winning these one-score games. They're going to get caught up, and eventually when that happens, the Bills will have an opportunity to make them down. They still got to play the Chargers, who I think are maybe more capable of beating them than they have been. So we'll see. I still think it could be in reach, but the Bills have to go on a pretty muddy run. I think they're going to have to win 13 games if they want to have really any say in that one seed. But I think the two seed is absolutely up for grabs, because I think – the Ravens still have to play the Bengals, and those are always really, really competitive games. So are their divisional games. That the North Division, they just beat up on each other.
That's right.
So I suspect that the Bills will absolutely have a chance, especially if by the time the Bills play the Jets again, they've completely laid down, which could absolutely be the case. I mean, there's a really good chance Aaron Rodgers is going to get, shut down for some sort of phantom hamstring injury and go back to his cave and wherever he goes to rip his ayahuasca. So
enter the darkness once again. Nate, yeah. What about Miami? I didn't have a chance to watch a lot of Dolphins Cardinals from yesterday, the return of Tua, but I also didn't see any eye-popping stats from the big playmakers, the speed of that offense. So what Dolphins team do you think the Bills get come Sunday?
The one that they really should handle. I think that they're the team, they're probably a worse version of the team that, the Bills absolutely walked a couple of weeks ago. But I think it's also, and I think this way, is I've always thought, even like going into week two or whenever it was they played them earlier this year and then last year, there's still this sort of level of nervousness that you have when you go into a divisional game, even with the Bills, really dominating the division over the last couple of seasons. It just feels like Miami's eventually going to, get the monkey off their back. And this one, maybe, I think Bills fans in large part probably feel the same way I do, which is I'm feeling really confident going into this week, how the Bills have performed the last 2 weeks against bad teams. I don't know what to think of Seattle, but, obviously the Titans, and Titans specifically, are a pretty bad football team. The Bills show up in the first half like they did against the Titans. They could absolutely be a close game, next week against the Dolphins. But I'm expecting the Bills to take care of business and blow that team out and really probably end their season. And listen, the Bills put 7 losses on the column for the Dolphins. It would not surprise me at all to see them start to consider cleaning house in Miami. And how funny would that be? 5 months after McDaniel gets his extension, for them to fire him and I don't know, what are they going to do? Who's going to go? Who is more equipped from a play calling perspective than McDaniel to run that offense? I don't know. And specifically Tua. So, I would really like the Bills to, over the next couple of weeks, put an end to Rodgers and put an end to this Dolphins team. And I think everyone will feel a lot better about the rest of the season once that's over with.
Nate, we'll be listening coming up on Sunday. Gotta love those 1 o'clock kickoffs from home there, Nate.
I love the 1 o'clock kickoff. Can't wait. Hopefully it'll be some beautiful weather, low, I think 50s or like low 60s maybe this weekend. So Hopefully another great weather day, and it'll be November, right? It'll be November.
Yeah.
Holy cow, it'll be November.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right, first November game. That was a tough realization in real time, but yeah, it's November, guys.
Nate, appreciate the time, man. Enjoy your week.
Always, fellas. Thanks.
There he is, Nate Gary. Hear him on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network on our Odyssey Sports sister station, WGR, talking some Bills. Talking some Dolphins, talking some Bills and Seahawks as well, getting his recap from yesterday. And yeah, when you're looking ahead to Sunday, I have a hard time not seeing it be a blow. I mean, the way the Bills have always handled the Dolphins, and I know you're going to say, oh, be careful. When did this happen? When did you and I reverse roles this season for the Bills?
I whiffed thinking that Seattle would have competent coaching and, you know, kind of go to the...
Pull up Noah Fant's stat line? Because we were worried about Noah Fant as a playmaker for Seattle.
You say we. You were not.
We.
We. No,
we
I
are
the
sports
one.
Bar collectively.
No, 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 no. I brought up Noah Fant to Andy Barron's Friday, and you were like, please, Noah Fant shouldn't scare
Noah,
you.
Noah Fant sucks. He sucks. He's a zero. I think he had one catch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a foul. I mean, if there was anything that was shocking to me, it was the ineffectiveness of Kenneth Walker. Like, they didn't. He was a zero for them.
They didn't use him.
Ridiculous.
They really didn't. That's the part. Update from Houston, Danger. Keeping an eye on Stephon Diggs. Is that a season-ending knee injury? Head coach D'Amico Ryan speaking last hour, quote, for Diggs, we're still evaluating. We'll see where it's at.
We're going to take a break and come back with more before we talk more Buffalo Bills with Ryan Talbot, NewYorkUpstate.com. We were talking with Nate about Josh Allen and maybe his name being thrown in the MVP conversation a little bit more loudly here. I'm going to make a case for a coach to be coach of the year based on what his team has done through some adversities here. And we were just talking about Mike McDaniel and the lack of success through adversity that the Dolphins have had this season. This guy would be the polar opposite of what they've seen down in Miami. And also, a little bit of chatter here, Gino, because you brought it up. What if the playoffs started today? Let's look at the seeding. Let's look at where the Bills would land and how this would all shake out for Buffalo.
I like that. On a football Monday, something happened down in Houston with that Colts-Texans game that I don't think I've ever seen in the NFL, and it's very telling, and it's something that when you're looking ahead for the Buffalo Bills, maybe not is a bad thing at all. And out in Denver, we weren't paying any attention to that game whatsoever, right? Yeah, okay, let's see, the Commanders and Bears, but oh yeah, the Broncos and Panthers. Are you kidding me? We had this little jawing after the game.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I've got some thoughts here, and I'm going to do what I never thought I would do, defend Sean Payton.
All right, we'll get to that and more next. Ryan Talbot, New York Upstate, going to talk Bills, Seahawks, and look ahead to Bills, Dolphins as well. That's coming up in the 4 o'clock hour here in the Sports Bar. You're welcome to join us at 866-4FAN, 585-866-4326.
You're listening to the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.